Good morning, Jim Packard with you on the Ideas Network, in for Larry Mueller. He's back tomorrow for his annual visit with Santa Claus. Santa will be talking with the children of our listeners, and that's always an enjoyable show. Right now, Native Story, Song, and Spirit with Deborah Morningstar of Nina, who is an enrolled member of the United Nation of Wisconsin Turtle Clan. She's an Oneida storyteller and cultural presenter. Her CD, Tales from the Lodge, was a 2008 Native American Music Awards nominee in the Spoken Word category, and it's a pleasure to have her on the telephone with us today. Hello, Deborah.
Hello, Jim. Saguli, hello.
Thank you so much. When did you discover that you had an aptitude for storytelling?
Well, Jim, it's many moons ago. A long time ago, of course, when I was a young girl, second, third grade, my mother was told by a teacher, a third grade teacher, that I was a pathological liar. And so the storytelling began way back in those days, in the old days. And it's kind of funny now to be, you know, at this age, to be doing the stories as a job, as a way of life. And so I think it's kind of funny that back in those days, I was told I was a storyteller as young as 8, 9 years old.
What are the kinds of stories that you might have been dreaming up at that time?
Well, one story kind of, we all laugh, my family, we laugh about this. When I was in third grade, I think it was around the summer break, and I was leaving school, and the teacher said, well, we'll see you next year. You'll have a new teacher, Deborah. And I said, well, I won't be coming back next year because I'm going to be moving to Hollywood. And the teacher said, well, why are you moving to Hollywood, Deborah? Because my cousin lives out there, and she's a actress, and I'm going to be joining her as a dancer on her show. So I got myself in some trouble, and the teacher came right home with me and told my mother that I was a teller of tall tales.
Now,
so that was back in the early 60s.
And so you're 8, 9 years old at that time. How long have you been a professional storyteller?
I've been, the last 10 years, I've been a full-time professional storyteller, but I have been a professional storyteller for the past 22 years. It actually began about 24 years ago when my oldest son was in preschool and kindergarten, and then on, you know, up through the elementary grades. I just started doing it volunteer. You know, I'd be called into my child's classroom to tell some a Native American story or to share some of our culture. And at that time, I was really learning myself more about my tribal roots and my culture and the tribal teachings. And so I was a student as well, but I was very happy to share it with my son's classmates. And again, that was back when he was in preschool. And then, of course, one thing led to another. One teacher would say, well, Deborah, can you come into our classroom? And so it just cut. And then I went from that school on to other schools in the area. And then I had another son after that a few years later, and his classmates invited me into their classroom. So it just really kind of took off from there.
You have a wonderful website at DeborahMorningstar.com
in which
people can see you in native dress. They can hear you and see you performing stories, playing the flute, rattle, and drum as a part of the accompaniment that you do. It's really an excellent website.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. A lot of time went into it,
uh-huh.
But I can't take much of the credit. My webmaster laid it out for me, but it really is a vehicle to mainly to educate the community when folks are looking for information on Native American culture, Jim, or if they're wanting to know where all the powwows are in Wisconsin, or teachers, librarians, parents want to learn more about Wisconsin tribes in general. It's really a clearinghouse for information on Native American culture as a whole.
When you were a child many moons ago, you were taught by the old ones, in quotes, I phrase it that way, to see life in relationship to all things, including animals. They didn't have access to the internet where they can go to a website like yours and the ones that you suggest and hear and see you telling your stories. How has this changed the appreciation of young Native American Oneida in terms of their cultural heritage?
Well, it's just another vehicle, and it's, you know, many Native, you know, like for instance, my tribe, the Oneida here of Wisconsin, we only have a small percentage of our people living on reservation. We've got upward of 15,000 tribal members living all over the world, and many of the Oneida children, I believe it's around 90% of our children, Oneida children, do not even live on reservation. We're scattered all over, you know, the cities. Many of us are urban Indians, and so to have these, you know, the technology that we've got today, where the children can, you know, right now we're offering our language classes online, and the children, they can be in an inner city and they can hear a tribal elder speak. They can hear the elders tell the stories in the Oneida language. They can learn how to make baskets or do beadwork online. It's incredible. I mean, we, as a people, as a tribal people, we've always been focusing on, I should not say focusing, but we've always, community has been very important to us. And so to be able to bring our people and our teachings and our original instructions together through technology is amazing. And it's really resurrecting our culture.
Deborah Morningstar of Neenah is our guest and enrolled member of the United Nation of Wisconsin Turtle Clan. Her CD, Tales from the Lodge, was a 2008 Native American Music Awards nominee in the spoken word category. Her website is deborahmorningstar.com. And if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have questions about culture, then give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. Just in terms of a little history, when Europeans arrived in 1492 to America, the Oneida tribe was a member of the Iroquois Confederation, but found themselves behind the eight ball when it comes to the French and Indian War and the Revolutionary War. Is that correct?
That is correct. And you had it right in some prior conversation that you and I had through smoke signal, or I should say through email. You stated that, and it's true that we, our leader, and it was back in the early 1800s, around 1819, I believe, mm-hmm. Eleazar Williams had suggested that our people, or a faction of us, move to or migrate down to Wisconsin. And a small faction of our people did migrate down to Wisconsin, and that's where my family, my ancestors came in that group. And of course, it was due, always as always, to religion.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they did originally settle around the city of Oneida, along the and also along the Fox River. So some of the Oneidas also, Jim, were left. A large amount of Oneidas were left in our homeland in the New York territory, which is New York today.
Mm-hmm.
And then and they're still there. And then another faction moved up to Canada, to Thames, Canada. So we do have three factions of Oneidas to this day: Wisconsin Oneida, New York Oneida, and Canada Oneida.
All right. Let's take a couple of calls. Let's go to Danny first in Oneida. Hi, Danny. What's on your mind today?
Hi, your guest as well. I'm the VISTA worker at Elder Services. I've been there since February, and I've had the honor of meeting a number of elders, some that have left very impressionable memories of me. And I was wondering if you could comment on Maria Hinton, just a real gem to have. She's one of the oldest, and she's, you know, responsible for really preserving a lot of the language. And it'd be great if you could explain or go in depth a little bit more about her.
Maria Hinton, thanks for your call, Danny. She's actually, Maria is, I think, just about close to 100 years old, and she is one of our few remaining fluent-speaking Oneidas, and she's responsible for putting together, was instrumental in putting together our original, in translating our dictionary, translated into the Oneida language. Maria is also a a faith keeper in our nation, which means that she is high in great regard. She's given is able to give names, and there are some other people in the Oneida community that are known as faith keepers. She is a gem, as Danny said, and if we haven't, if there's any folks in the community that have not yet had an opportunity to sit down with Maria and enjoy the teachings that she can certainly share with us. Actually, Maria has told me stories of when she would play. She used to live next door many, many years ago when she was a young girl to my grandmother, Cassie Denny. And Marie has told me lovely stories about the days that they played together out on their Oneida reservation. And, of course, that's a long time ago. But, yes, she is definitely a gem.
Danny, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. Mary in Madison, do you have a quick question before the news?
Could she talk about the name of the Turtle Clan and what it all means, and then powwows, how they got started, and have they changed in modern times?
You know, this is a question that's going to take a little bit of time, and we only have a minute before we have to break for the news. So let's ponder that question, and we will come back to it. And we'll also have a traditional story about the people of Turtle Island, Iroquois Story of the Cornhusk, that'll be coming up after the news as well. I know that you offer Native Storyteller residencies and healing workshops. People can also visit you at the Wisconsin Humanities Council website. So it's quite a program that we've got lined up after we check the latest news. Deborah Morningstar of NENA, an enrolled member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin Turtle Clan, is an Oneida storyteller and cultural presenter, and her CD, Tales from the Lodge, was a 2008 Native American Music Awards nominee in the spoken word category, and I can tell you that her website is stunning. It's really great. I see a lot of websites with this job, and so you know when someone has really got a good one and a lot to offer. That's at DeborahMorningstar.com. I'm Jim Packard. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us today as we talk about Native story, song, and spirit with Deborah Morningstar of NENA. She's an enrolled member of the United Nation of Wisconsin Turtle Clan, is an Oneida storyteller and cultural presenter. And again, Deborah, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thank you for having me, Jim. Very happy to be here.
Just before the news, Mary called in with a question about Turtle Clan, Turtle Island, perhaps, and also about the beginning of powwow. Let's take the turtle question first.
Okay. You mentioned Turtle Island. Oftentimes, and I don't think our caller Mary had mentioned that, but I'll just quickly comment on Turtle Island. Many times when Indian people you'll hear us talk about Turtle Island. Turtle Island is also in many of our stories and our teachings. We talk about Turtle Island because turtle, if you were able to get an aerial view of North America, you would see that it very closely resembles a turtle. You
mm-hmm.
can see the neck, the shell, the tail, going down into Central and South America. So you can certainly see that Turtle Island, where it came from, when you would imagine it from the air, from mm-hmm. an aerial view. Regarding our clans, yes, we do have, just like you, our listeners, you, all of us have families. The Oneida people have families as well, and they're larger families. They're divided up. They each have responsibilities. They're divided up into three clans, first being Turtle, next Bear, and Wolf. And you're right, if this could take some time, I'll briefly mention what the responsibilities of each are. And you will also find more information and a ton more information. I've got a link on my website to Oneida Nation Cultural Heritage Department, and you can certainly find more, Mary, on this topic of clans.
Mm-hmm.
The turtle clan is responsible for the environment. We're to look after the land, as we really are all responsible for being stewards. We're asked to take care of our land, but our turtle originally was in our original creation story, and we moved then on to the bear. The bear is responsible for the medicines, providing and gathering, harvesting, and administering medicines to our people. The plants, the bark, the herbs, the roots, the berries, and helping our people to stay well, and also to help cure them in the time of sickness. What we call walking crooked or being out of balance, the bear people would be responsible for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move on to the wolf. The wolf is really the pathfinder. The wolf helps us to. We're told that if we know of people in the wolf clan, we should go to those people, and they will help us to find our way back. If we are lost, if we need teachings or instruction, we talk to those people that are in that wolf clan. And further, I should mention of the three clans, we were in the old days instructed never to marry within the same clan, because it is the same as if we are in the, for instance, if I'm in the turtle clan, which I am, they are my brothers and sisters. So if I were to marry someone within my own clan, the original teachings say or tell me that I would be marrying my own brother.
Mm-hmm.
or a brother that, or a man that's of turtle clan would be marrying his own sister.
I understand.
And even if we're not blood, we are still clan related. And in the old days, boy, that rule was highly regarded by the elders, especially by clan mothers.
Is it somewhat relaxed now, or is it still defined that way?
We really are trying to return to those old teachings and rules. But it has become more relaxed. But as I said, Jim, we are trying to get back to those original teachings. And you wanted me, Jim, to comment on powwow?
Powwow, yes.
Okay, powwow. Well, originally, it was a gathering of, in the old days, even Plains tribes and other tribes throughout our country, when we would come together, oftentimes this would be for ceremony, and it would be a time for prayer and for dance and for song. But in the years, I'm not even sure how many years, I would say at least for the last 50 years, probably more. Powwows now are a time when we all come together as Native people, and we invite our European brothers and sisters to join us. It's we talk about powwow time in the United States for Indian people. This is a great time, a fun time, a family coming home and dancing, singing, eating and eating. And it's a wonderful time for us to be reunited. But also powwows today have taken on competition. In fact, when you come to attend our powwow up in Oneida around the 4th of July, we have tribes that are dancers from all over this great country that come to compete in our jingle dance, our traditional fancy dance. So it's competition, but most powwows today are open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
There are some that are closed, but if that's the case, it would be posted as such. I would point out another thing, Jim. There, if listeners are interested to find out where powwows are today, are they only in the summertime? Oh, yes, we can get them in the summer. We can find powwows in Wisconsin in all four seasons of the year. So on my website, I've got a link to which is called the Great Lakes Intertribal Council, and it's under, one of my links. I think it's under Deborah's favorite links, and there you will find a listing of every tribe in Wisconsin and all of our powwow locations and dates. So it's a great time, and you're in. Everyone of all color is certainly welcome.
Deborah Morningstar is our guest. She's an Oneida storyteller and cultural presenter, and her website is a great one. It's deborahmorningstar.com. I had asked, and you had agreed to tell us one of your traditional Native stories, and I think it's having to do with the story of the corn husk.
That's right. It is this story also is featured on my CD, Tales from the Lodge, and I would love to be able to play flute on this, but I'm not going to do that. But I will incorporate what I call my helper, my relative, which is a rattle, Oneida horn rattle. So I would like to give you that story right now.
All right.
Bear with me, listeners, if it gets a little too loud at points. We'll do our best here. The Iroquois story of the corn husk doll. Many moons ago, and that means a long, long time ago, there lived a beautiful Native girl. Well, this girl, every day she would hurry down the hill. She would hurry down the hill down to the water. She would get down to that water, and she could see her reflection in that water. She would look into that water, and she would say these crooked words. Oh, look at me. I'm so beautiful. No one looks like me. Oh. I am the most pretty girl in the village. Why, my eyes are shaped like almonds. Oh, my skin is golden brown, and my hair is like corn silk. Oh, no one certainly is as beautiful as I am. Well, every day that girl would go down that hill. She would hurry down to that creek so she could admire her beauty. Well, one day, sitting on the top of a big old pine tree, sat Mr. Owl. And that owl, he looked at that girl, and he said these words. Who, do you think you are, girl? You should not be bragging about yourself. Didn't anyone ever tell you it is not good to brag? It is not good to be vain. It is important what's inside of you, girl. Oh, I'm not going to listen to you. What do you know? I'm beautiful. Take a look at me, owl. No one looks like me.
Well, I'm going to warn you that you will be sorry if you continue in this way, girl.
Oh, I'm not going to listen to you, Mr. Owl. Just get out of here. Go read a book.
And so that owl, he flew away.
Hey, hey, ah, hey, ah, hey, oh, hey.
The next day, that girl, she hurried down that hill as fast as she could. Oh, she got down to that water. Oh, she began to splash in the water. She could not find her face. She called out to the animal people. Brother Owl, where is my face? I cannot see my face. Sister Raccoon, where is my face? I cannot feel my eyes. Someone please help me. And finally, she called out to the maker of all things. Sunganadesu, where is my face? We as Iroquois people know what happened to that girl's face. It's taught to us that her face was taken away from her on that evening. Oh, yes, the maker of all things took away her face as punishment. And to this day, we are told that we should always create or make our corn husk doll and make sure that we make that doll with no face, because it is certainly never good to be vain. Nakanakahe. Oh.
Way, hey, ah, hey, ah, hey, oh, hey.
Oh.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That is a story that is found on Tales from the Lodge, the CD that came out last year, wasn't it?
That's right. That's correct.
And you'll find that at DeborahMorningstar.com. One of the things that I noticed was that you offer Native Storyteller residencies. What is involved here?
Well, Jim, I'm invited oftentimes to schools throughout not only Wisconsin, but throughout the Midwest, even upward of the Midwest. And it is a way for me to get into the schools. A residency, meaning I go in there and I hang out there for, you know, sometimes a half day, sometimes a full day or a couple of days. And I bring with me what I call my traveling museum, my traveling exhibit, some artifacts, a lovely collection of beadwork, moccasins, baskets, and not only from Oneida, from my people, but from other tribes, in Wisconsin, so I can compare and contrast for the students so they can see the differences in our culture, in our traditional art form, our beadwork, our basketry, and so forth. So I go into the schools, and I set up my museum, and I, of course, tell stories. I sing songs. I teach the children some of the different games that the Native American children would play back a long time ago. What sorts of things do children do? And certainly the children in the schools, they're so excited, enthusiastic to learn, you know, about, you know, where did Native American children, where did they hang out? What did they do? Where did you as Indian people, where did you live? What kinds of houses did you live in? So I like to provide, offer that information as to how we lived in the old days, but most importantly, and I really try to express this to the students and the teachers, that I want you to understand that we as Native people are here today. Please don't only think about us in the past. Because the minute I come into a school, you know, oftentimes these children, when I'm doing a residency, sometimes the littlest ones, Jim, will come up to me and say, if you're a real Indian, how come you're not dead? You know, they are so surprised to see, I know it sounds funny, but they're surprised to see that a real live Native person is here alive, and we're not wearing, you know, the long black hair. And the you know, one little boy just said to me recently, Deborah, how come you don't have lines on your face? I thought you're supposed to have lines on your face. And of course, if they look closely, they'll see I have lines on my face. But, you know, they are expecting to see Native American, expecting to see me, because they knew I'm Native American, looking in the way that our people did, and I shouldn't even say the way our people did, according to how TV has taught them, you know, mm-hmm. the too many cowboy and Indian movies. And so my whole goal in doing a school residency, Jim, is to dismantle dangerous Indian stereotypes, to educate the children on who we are today as a people, what we look like, that we can be right here in your schools, in your neighborhoods, in your communities, and that we're alive and we're well and we're thriving. And it's a wonderful experience because I'm really thinking of myself at the moment. I learned so much from these children in these schools and the teachers, because certainly those teachers have the hardest job in the world, and it's wonderful that they are open to bringing in folks like myself into the schools to teach about our culture to the students. So a residency basically is where I bring in, you know, I do stories, I teach, touch on the history, dismantle those Indian stereotypes, answer questions, and let the students touch and feel the artifacts and play the drums and touch the beadwork. And, you know, many museums we go to, as we know, we can't touch anything. The kids are told, you know, don't touch. But mm-hmm. in Deborah's museum, I want them to touch and to experience, and certainly that's the best way to learn.
Let's take a call from Lori in Stillwater next. Mm-hmm. Hello, Lori.
Hi, this is a great program. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Lori.
I am curious. There's a lot of talk and stories about what might be going on around this 2012 transition that we're going through. And I it's turned into apocalyptic kind of stuff. I don't believe it's anything like that, but I think it's more like a transition to a different world age or changing human consciousness. I'm wondering if, since I'm hearing that indigenous peoples all over the world have very similar stories and prophecies around this, I'm wondering if your clan has any stories about this, and if you do, are there preparations going on for this transition that we're all involved in?
Lori, that's a wonderful question, and I'll tell you what, I've recently talked to an elder friend of mine, and the way she explained it, you know, this is just my opinion, and I'm going to share what I was shared with me recently. I think you're right. I think you're along the lines of a new consciousness, a new way of looking at our brothers and sisters, and so this is what she's shared with me. Really, is that we are coming into, and it hasn't, you know, it isn't just going to happen at 2012, is what I'm taught. That it is happening now and has been happening. That we're moving closer to a better world, to sharing, you know, just like with the work that I do with children and sharing in stories, not only myself as a storyteller, but storytellers all over this great world, we're opening our hearts and our minds to sharing more readily and to be more open with our teachings, with our ceremonies. And so I believe that if we as a world are going to heal, we need to share and we need to come together and to love one another and I think it's more as you said, Lori, a new conscious. I'm not sure I'm using the correct words that you used, but just moving closer to that, embracing humanity and treating our brothers. You know, that's the original teaching of the dream catcher, really, is that teaching of the web of life, what we do. For instance, if you look at a dream catcher and you see the web in that catcher, if you were to take a scissors and cut that web would completely fall apart. And the same thing goes for the teaching of the web of life, that what we do to our brother, we do really to ourselves. It comes back to us, and the same thing when how we treat our earth, our mother earth, our first mother. We litter, we hurt our earth, we do these horrific things to our earth and to the creation on our earth. That ultimately comes back to hurt us. It touches all of us as two-leggeds, as humans. And so I believe, and what I've been hearing from other Native people, is that we're moving forward to being more open and more loving and more welcoming to our brothers and sisters. And gosh, I believe that with all my heart.
Lori,
so I hope that helped share a little bit on the topic.
Lori, thank you so much for the call. You've got a couple of national venues that you've been invited to perform at, including the Midwinter Storytelling Conference in Orem, Utah in February.
Yes.
And the National Storytelling Conference in Los Angeles, July going into August.
Yes.
Hadn't even realized that there were these kinds of conferences.
Oh yes, they're in festivals. They're all over, actually, Jim, all over the world for storytellers. We have something called the National Storytelling Network, which is really they offer conferences and festivals every year. We have one also on the regional level called Northland Storytelling Network, which brings in storytellers from all over, actually all over the world, not only the United States, not only our region. And we attend these gatherings to hone our skills, first of all, to get together with other storytellers and just have a wonderful time.
Mm-hmm.
In hearing the stories. You know, there's stories are as old as this world. And so, you know, to see the lovely talent that's out there, and to hear their stories and to find out what's going on, say, on the West Coast, as far as marketing. How would we market ourselves as professional storytellers? But
Deborah, we're going to have to
all over.
We're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you today, to hear your story, and people should go to DeborahMorningstar.com, and they'll find out all kinds of information about you, where you're appearing, kind of stories that you're doing. They'll see Tales from the Lodge performed, and I hope that people take advantage of that. Thank you so much for being with us today. If you'd like a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store. Ask for program 1223G. I'm Jim Packard. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer. Larry Mueller is back tomorrow, and Santa Claus will make his annual visit to our studios. Thanks for listening.